It's Monday, December 5th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes from San Diego at the baseball winter meetings. Hoynesy, out there, a little bit foggy in the morning right now, but hopefully the fog clears up and the fog over this free agency period clears up and we start seeing some signings and some trades and some moves, huh?
Yeah, definitely, Joe. This is really kind of the first full day of the meetings. Everyone was kind of getting into town yesterday on Sunday. You know, although, you know, there was some news, obviously, with the Hall of Fame. But I think now things will pick up and we'll see, you know, where some of these big free agents are going and big name free agents and whether or not the Guardians, can make a move here.
We'll get into the trades and the signings or free agency here in a second. But you did mention the Hall of Fame. The Modern Era of Baseball Committee did meet yesterday, Sunday, and they elected one new member to the Hall of Fame. There was an 8-member finalists list, and among those was former Cleveland outfielder Albert Bell. He did not make the Hall of Fame. However, somebody who had a connection there to the Guardian or to Cleveland, Fred McGriff, who won a World Series in 1995 against Cleveland for Atlanta. Fred McGriff he and his 493 home runs are headed to Cooperstown in the summer. The crime dog certainly deserving of the nod to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he was a unanimous pick of the 16-member committee that voted on the 8 players. Slash line at 284, 377, 509, played 19 seasons, Joe. And like you said, 493 home runs, without the, strike shortened seasons of 94, 95, almost assuredly would have reached 500. And a 303 lifetime hitter in the postseason. And of course, he helped Atlanta win its second World Series? first of two World Series. And of course, it was against Cleveland.
Yeah. And Tommy Mansky is somewhere looking down and smiling at Fred McGriff. Of course, Fred McGriff, famous for those commercials you'd see in between innings of a Guardians game, or a baseball game here in Cleveland. The baseball skills, teaching young kids how to throw balls from the outfield into garbage cans and all the drills that make travel ball parents pull their hair out. Fred McGriff, certainly a guy who's, like you said, 19 seasons. That's a long time to play in the big leagues. And he would have definitely hit that magic number of 500 home runs. And really just, in terms of the guys who were on the list who the committee could have selected, Fred McGriff, impeccable character, impeccable, career, and it's sort of an obvious choice. Dale Murphy, Don Mattingly also coming close, but not getting enough votes from the committee to make it in. But the big news here really is that guys who were on the list, like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Curt Schilling, along with Albert Bell, unfortunately, did not get even close to the number of votes necessary to be elected.
Yeah, this was, more than McGriff getting in. This was a kind of a referendum on the steroid era and players like Bonds and Clemens. Rafael Palmeiro was on this 8-man ballot as well. And what the uphill battle they face in the years to come in getting into the Hall of Fame. And we're talking about, three of the most accomplished players in baseball history. Bonds with the most home runs in history. Clemens with 354 wins and 7 Cy Youngs. Palmeiro, only one of 6 guys to hit, 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. And they didn't even get 4 votes, Joe. And, who knows, the next time, the contemporary era committee votes on players whose impact came, you know, after 1980 will be in 2025 for the 2026 induction. And we don't even know if these guys will be on that ballot. So a tough, you know, just, you know, it wasn't just the writers here. You know, I think that's what it confirms. You know, Palmero only stayed 4 years on the BBWA ballot. Clemens and Bonds were, you know, went the full 10 years on the ballot, but never got more than, you know, 67% of the vote, I want to say. So, you know, and this committee that voted, they were made up of, you know, those guys' peers, you know, not, you know, some, you know, I think four or five, you know, six, probably six Hall of Famers, players, executives, and only three writers slash historians. So, you know, where do they go from here, Joe? It was a fascinating ballot to me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing here is that they just came off the writer's ballot. They had just been on and fallen off the ballot in terms of Bonds and Clemens and Schilling, I believe, in the most recent vote last year. So this was sort of like a litmus test, a follow up to that. You know, if they garnered some sort of support from this era committee, then you might have thought that there was a chance that somewhere in the next cycle they'd be able to get in. Now, like you said, I don't even know if they might even be nominated for the next time around. Like you said, the list of voters on this panel, the 16-member panel, included Hall of Fame members. I believe Chipper Jones was last minute was replaced by someone. I'm not sure who.
Yeah, an executive, Derek Hall, I think, from Miami.
Okay. But you know, there were a bunch of Hall of Fame members on there, and you know, it's famously every year you would get an email from I believe Joe Morgan would send it out and say, hey, you know, we don't want these guys in the Hall of Fame as Hall of Famers. So it might have just been that group in terms of the discussion and the debate over these candidates, those guys stepping forward for the most part and saying, hey, you know, let's focus our energies on McGriff and Mattingly and Murphy, because these guys don't have any of those questions about character or anything like that. And you saw how the voting went.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I thought, you know, Albert Bell and Schilling, you know, no connection with steroids, you know, that we know of. But, you know, they're kind of, you know, loose cannons, you know, and they did not, you know, Schilling got some votes. I think Schilling will get in. You know, I think he should have been in if he kept his mouth shut. You know, the writers would have put him in. He had, what, over 71% of the vote in 2021. Then he said he wanted to get taken off the ballot, and the Hall of Fame wouldn't let him get taken off the ballot, but he only got 58% of the vote last year in his final year of eligibility. Bell, I look at his numbers, and I think, you know, he's got a 10-year span there where he was, you know, one of the most dominant hitters in baseball. But his personality, he just irritated so many people. And, you know, what he did on and off the field wasn't great. But if you're looking in a vacuum, you know, I think it's hard to say he's not a Hall of Famer. But, you know, it's more than that, I guess. You know, the votes.
Especially in Cleveland, where we saw the best of him and we saw his most dominant. And we sort of looked past all of the off-field stuff, and you know, we certainly knew about it and wrote about it and read about it and all that, but you know, we kind of know that the opinion of him that's out there is not great, and he earned that. He put many hours into cultivating that you know, terrible relationship with the media, and it must have extended over into fellow Hall or other Hall of Famers and executives who knew about him. You know, in the years since he's retired, he hasn't kept himself out of the news with other incidents that have popped up. But again, you talk to the guy, and there are times when you talk to him and he's just, you know, approachable and fine and has a real good, you know, insight about stuff. I'd love to just sit and talk hitting with him, but you know, that's not enough right now. You kind of have to have that character to be a Hall of Famer. And apparently the committee doesn't view Albert Bell as, you know, high enough character to also get in on this vote.
Yeah, and you know, I'm thinking, you know, with the next time this ballot, this committee votes, maybe a guy like Kenny Lofton will get, you know, get selected by, you know, the BBWA historical committee that puts together the ballot, and maybe, you know, he'll get some consideration. You know, this was Albert's second time on a short ballot. You know what? I think you know, I'm sure I would like to see his name come up again. But, you know, it might be time to look at some different, you know, other players that, you know, didn't make it on the writer's ballot.
Is there any other player, hitter or pitcher or anyone from the mid-90s era Cleveland team that you think, it, besides Bell and Lofton, who I think all of us think, you know, are definitely worthy candidates? Anybody else who you think is getting snubbed, even like a pitcher right now who's not getting a look?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, to me, Oral Hershiser and Dennis Martinez came off the ballot much too soon. You know, what they did, and they both had long careers, both were good in the postseason, especially Oral. And I thought he got kind of, you know, kind of the short straw there, you know, when you look at his numbers. Now, you know, he did get hurt and he missed the season with the shoulder thing, but boy, he pitched a long time and he was really successful. And the same could be said for Martinez.
Yeah, I think the Hall of Fame would be a better place with both of those guys in. If you think about it, you know, Dennis Martinez, I remember walking into the clubhouse in Miami in 2019 when Cleveland was on the road down there, and Presidente, he just walked in and he owned the rooms. Like everybody was smiling and shaking his hand and walking up to him. It was like he just sort of owned the place. And Oral Hershiser, you can listen to him do color commentary on the air. He does Dodgers broadcasts. He actually turned me down for an interview once when I wanted to talk about the home run he gave up to Mark McGwire that hit the scoreboard at Progressive Field. He actually just flat out turned me down on an interview request for that, but I won't hold that against him. I think he's a Hall of Fame worthy candidate right there. So maybe we'll see that down the road. Who knows?
Yeah, and McGwire dotted the I on the Budweiser sign at Progressive Field with that home run.
and Hershiser's teammates gave him such a hard time about it that he didn't want to talk to me about it for a story that I was writing about the home run. So anyways, let's move on. Winter meetings are going on. No shortage of rumors and, you know, possibilities out there right now. One of the big names that's being tossed around, Brian Reynolds, Pittsburgh says that they have no intention of trading Brian Reynolds. But Reynolds has requested a trade from the Pirates. Who would be the teams that want to jump at this guy, and are the Guardians one of them?
You know, I think the Guardians, you know, I bet they've kicked the tires on Reynolds in years past, you know, and I think, you know, they should, if they haven't already, you know, inquire about him right now. But other teams are involved too, Joe. The Rockies, the Braves, the Yankees. Yankees tried to get him at the trade deadline last year. So, you know, this is a guy that's, to me, you know, you look at just from a Cleveland perspective, you look at the outfield now. The Guardians finally have, you know, a solid outfield with Kwan and Straw and Oscar Gonzalez. And you've got bench guys. You've got George Valera coming. And, you know, do you disturb that? And I think, you know, this is a center fielder that's averages 18 home runs a year over his 4-year career with Pittsburgh. He's got 3 years of control left, counting 2023. To me, he's the ideal candidate, Joe. I don't know if you want to put him in center field and disrupt what Straw has done, you know, especially from a defensive standpoint. But to me, if you're looking to improve the offense, this is a guy you should talk about.
Yeah, he would definitely give you much more pop and a little more consistency than Straw gave you last season. But who knows if Straw is able to produce a comeback season and earn that contract he got before last year. Reynolds is it's interesting if there's some sort of back and forth between him and the organization with the Pirates. If they're saying they don't want to trade him, do you think that's just blowing smoke, or is that do they really want to keep him? It really seems like anybody who's any of any value, Pittsburgh just has traditionally had no problem parting ways with.
Yeah, and I guess from a front office point of view, do you want a player that's unhappy in the clubhouse? And I don't think, from what I've understand, Reynolds, doesn't say a whole lot. He's a pretty good guy, and this might be coming from his agent, more than anybody. But yeah, I think he's grown weary of losing, and the Pirates have done a lot of that in the last several years. But just because a player requests a trade doesn't mean you're going to trade them, So I
Correct.
think this is something you probably, sit down and, if you're Ben Cherington, the GM with the Pirates, you sit down, you hash this out, you air it out, and then you go from there. And then you make the decision whether we trade this guy or if we can, mend this bridge and go forward. Because he's making $6 million this, or a little over $6 million for 2023. They didn't get an extension done. This past, or they haven't gotten an extension done, and maybe that's what's behind this whole thing.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh does have a couple of young, exciting, hot young players, Ke'Bryan Hayes, O'Neal Cruz. The left side of their infield is really fun to watch, and a couple of real exciting young players. So maybe they try to build, and maybe they keep Reynolds because they want to try and build like that. But it always just seems like anytime a player comes into his own the way that Reynolds has, he becomes more valuable to Pittsburgh as a trade chip than anything else. So we'll see how that goes. Speaking of trade chips, the Oakland Athletics rumored to be getting closer and closer to finding a deal for their catcher Sean Murphy. The Atlanta Braves are reportedly out in terms of being in on a deal for Murphy, but that leaves several other clubs, including the Guardians, sort of seeking some sort of deal with Sean Murphy. What's the latest there that you've heard? Have you heard or seen anything out there in San Diego? And when do you expect something to happen with Murphy?
Yeah, I don't know, Joe. I think there's been a lot of talk that something could get done by the end of the winter meetings. I tend to believe that this could linger a while just because so many teams are interested, and Oakland has to sort through the offers. But he would certainly look good in a Cleveland uniform. They need a catcher. They added a catcher, Sunday morning, a free agent, Viola, am I saying that name right? The last
It's
name?
I want to say it right before I it's Mibries Vilora is
Velora,
the
right.
yeah.
We saw him with Kansas City, pretty good defensive catcher. They like his plate discipline. But he's a depth guy to me, Joe. They still need to go out and get a catcher, and Murphy is certainly at the head of the class. Austin Hedges is still out there. We'll see what happens. But what do you think it would take for Cleveland to get Murphy?
So you're talking prospect capital. You're talking a package that you could put together. I think it will certainly include one of the top pitchers in the organization, prospect wise, whether that's Daniel Espino or Tanner Bibby or Logan Allen. I think any one of those guys would be somebody that they would ask on, but I don't think that Antonetti would be willing to move on those guys. Even a Gavin Williams, who really sort of made a name for himself last season. Those would be the four pitching names that I would say you would probably ask for at least one of those guys. You probably ask for a George Valera or a Brian Rocchio in terms of top position players in exchange, simply because of the control that you have over Murphy coming back. You've got 3 years of arbitration control over him, and you want you know, a big prospect return in terms of what you get back. I would say probably either Valera or Rocchio, or you know, somebody else, maybe a guy who's a little more major league ready, like a Gabriel Arias.
Yeah, those are good names right there, Joe. And I think it's, you know, it's going to hurt one way or the other. It's going to hurt this farm system. You know, I tend to look at, you know, both these kind of these projected deals, either for Reynolds or Murphy, as kind of a Mike Clevenger deal in reverse. You know, it's going to, you're going to, the Guardians are going to, you know, kind of shake the prospect tree and wave goodbye to, you know, some top guys there.
Well, and maybe you try and move a guy like a Juan Brito that you just picked up from Colorado, and maybe you purposefully got him in because he's attractive to an Oakland or a team that's building in that regard. But yeah, like you said, don't expect this to be an everybody wins sort of trade if it does go down with Cleveland and Oakland. This is going to be a, you know, you're getting your guy, but you're giving up a whole lot on your end, because you've got a lot to give up. The Guardians do have a very deep farm system and a lot of major league ready guys that they're going to, if they don't trade away, they're going to have to try and find a place for. You know, a guy like a Tyler Freeman is the perfect example. This is a guy who's ready to play in the big leagues next year. He's ready to play almost full time. And the Guardians don't have a spot for him as of right now.
Yeah, you know, and they seem to have stockpiled all these, you know, infielders and, you know, some outfielders as well. And you got, you know, sometimes, you know, the bill comes due it eventually. And you have to, you know, either, you know, make a move to create space for a guy like Freeman, or you have to move Freeman. So, you know, I think they're facing that situation with a number of players.
What's your perfect package right now in exchange for Murphy? Murphy straight up from Oakland. Who are you giving up just to get him?
Boy, that's a great question. I think, you know, Arias is a guy that I think would be included. I think you've got to throw one of those pitchers in there. Maybe you know, Logan Allen and maybe Tyler Freeman. And I don't, you know, and I don't know, Rocchio, probably that's too much if you put Rocchio in there. But, you know, it's got to be along those lines, I think.
I think a guy like a Valera might be hands off because they want to see what he can do at Triple A before they make a decision on him over an extended period of time. I also think if you're getting Sean Murphy, you might have to give up a catcher. So, you know, the asking price might be Bo Naylor, or a little less sort of pain inducing would be Brian Lavastida, who's already made his debut. So the clock is ticking on him. You know, one or two of those guys might be in the ask. I would probably be less comfortable moving Daniel Espino. I think a Gavin Williams would be a high price to pay. He would probably be the headliner of that deal. And then, like you said, maybe Gavin Williams, Tyler Freeman, and Lavastida in exchange for Murphy, plus maybe, you know, throw in a low minor league guy, maybe an outfielder to sort of, you know, make things go a little. But, yeah, it's going to be a big package if it gets done in terms of bringing Sean Murphy here. It's a lot to give up.
For sure, Joe. And, but that's what, hey, you know, if you, the Guardians are close right now, you know, they don't need a whole lot of help, but they do need a catcher. They do need some offense. You can, I think this, you add one or two players to this roster and you know, you're ready to go. You're ready to defend the AL Central title. You're ready to, you know, make another push into the postseason. I really believe that, and this is an opportunity. I don't think if you're Chris Antonetti or Mike Chernoff, you can't let this opportunity pass. You can't let a season like this pass.
Right. Speaking of opportunities, Jacob DeGrom making headlines before the winter meeting started, signing with Texas. I don't think anybody expected him to leave the Mets, but he's out there. He's 5 years, $180 some million to go pitch in Texas in that new ballpark. What do you make of the DeGrom move to sign there in Texas?
Joe, last year the Rangers spent almost $500 million on on position players, Seager and Simeon, and this year they go out and get DeGrom, and if I'm the GM there, I'm sweating bullets. Listen, here's what DeGrom has done. And I he's a great pitcher, two-time Cy Young winner. When he's healthy, he's probably the best pitcher in baseball. But here's what he's done in the last 3 years. 12 starts, 68 innings. 15 starts, 92 innings. 11 starts, 61 innings. Joe, I mean, if you're going to be a starting pitcher, if you're going to invest that much money in a guy, you've got to get 25 to 30 starts out of him a year. And I just think I don't want to say it's madness, because obviously, I guess the Rangers know what they're doing, but that's a big, big gamble. They went out a long way on a limb here to me.
Come on. It's Texas. They got oil money down there, right? They can burn it up. No, I agree with you. I don't think you pay that much for that long for a pitcher who isn't going to give you 30 starts a year, or at least you don't expect to give you, you don't expect Jacob DeGrom at this point in his career to go out there and give you 30 starts in a season. You're going to be happy with 20 to 25 starts. You're going to be over the moon with 20 to 25 starts out of DeGrom this year, and you're probably not going to get it. And they've been very careful with him in New York. And they've also sort of rushed him back at times from some of these injuries. So, I don't know. I question the move as well, but hopefully it works out for them better than it did when they acquired Corey Kluber from Cleveland. He pitches a few more innings than Kluber did down there. The problem is he's going to be toiling in futility in the American League West, where you've already got Seattle and Houston, which are both loaded and look like next year the moon is their goal. So we'll see what Texas, if they can make any waves down there. They weren't able to do so last year.
Yeah, definitely. They're in a tough division. The Astros won the World Series last year or last season, and they're primed to win it again this year. They've loaded up. They've added Abreu, and they're looking to add more. So that's a tough division, and Texas is going to have their work cut out for them.
Where do you think Justin Verlander ends up? Speaking of Houston, he's been rumored everywhere from Texas to I believe the Mets were meeting with him, a bunch of other places, and you had an interesting rumor on Carlos Rodon as well.
Yeah, Carlos Rodon. Baltimore is in on Rodon. The Orioles just signed Kyle Gibson to a 1 year deal. And Joe, the bandbox that used to be called Camden Yards has suddenly become a pitcher friendly ballpark, because they moved the left field wall back about, 400 feet. I think it's 300 feet really, but I mean 30 feet basically. But it seems like 400 feet to all the hitters that are in there now. But I think that's helped. That's enticed some pitchers to come to Baltimore, and they also have a great infield defense as well. So they got Gibson. We'll see if they could land Rodon as well.
Yeah, it's if Aaron Judge is flying out to the warning track out there, it's a pretty deep left field. But like we said, Verlander, he could be in Los Angeles. He could be in New York. Who knows? I think he's going to find a place that he thinks is going to have a good chance of making it back to the World Series, because I think that's what he's all about right now, is writing his name in the history books more than anything else. All right, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll be back with more from the winter meetings with Hoynsey on Wednesday. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.